One more time, good evening and welcome everybody to this 24th colloquium of the Church Music Association of America. This year is a special year for the CMA since we are celebrating our 50th anniversary. So to all the members present here, a happy anniversary. The Church Music Association was formed as a combination of two existing groups here in the United States. One was the St. Cecilia Guild, the other one the St. Gregory Guild. And those go back into the 19th century through the Sicilian movement, the liturgical music reform movement that was so important in the Catholic Church. And so we actually can claim that we are the oldest existing institution, organization here for the sacred music cause. And we've enjoyed that colloquium here every year, and it's moved around for those that have been at the first colloquium. Wait, can I have a show of hands who's been at the first colloquium? You don't look old enough. 24 years ago, it was a humble beginning of 30, 40 members, and look where we're now. We have 240 registered people for this conference this week. And those of you who have been with us for many years know that this is an exciting week of great music making and great liturgical musical experience. May I see a show of hands who has never been to a colloquium before? Whoa! An extra special welcome. What I particularly find always very delightful is to see how many young people come to this. Classical music, sacred music, chant is not just for old people. We've seen that. Well, no, they like these. St. Louis Jesuits, and I can attest to that since I lived there. For those of you who have never been to a colloquium, one of the important questions is always how to find their courses. Please, tonight, before you get completely blasted, have a look at your sacred music colloquium program and read at least the first 10 pages carefully. It will tell you something about the chant scholars as well as the polyphony choirs, and see where you fit in there. Also, a very important thing for those courses is how long are you going to be here? Those of you who've been through this summer colloquium for a couple of years know there's always a number of attrition on Sundays. So if you're no longer here on Sunday, please don't sign up for a choir that sings their big pieces on Sunday. The same for people who have to leave on Friday. Please do not come to my choir, which sings on Saturday. At the beginning, I would like to extend a special welcome to all the faculty members, many of whom have been part of this colloquium for several years. Please, would the faculty stand up, please? Many other church music conferences. We do have lectures and keynote addresses, we have breakout sessions and classes, but the most important thing is really for people to have an opportunity to experience sacred music as a singer. So depending on what your experience is with that, please look at these various groups and see where you would fit in best. If you don't feel like singing at all because you've never sung a note, you can just observe. That's just fine as well. There's enough to hear and see. And the number of breakout sessions this year is probably larger than ever. Wonderful things there to catch. Jonathan just told me that for the organists, tomorrow we start a master class. So for those who want to play, please sign up for that. All the organ sessions are going to be at Christ Church Cathedral, except for the last one on Friday, which I think is at St. John's. Is that correct? Do I remember that correctly? Yeah, at St. John's. Father Paisley, you have a few things to announce, but before I ask Father Paisley for some housekeeping issues, I want to say a special word of thanks to the ladies who have been organizing this conference for this year. You know that Aline couldn't be with us this year, and it took three wonderful ladies to replace her, and they have done a triple wonderful job. So I think this is probably going to be the best conference that we've seen in a long time. Where is Janet? Janet Gorbitz. Janet has done a lot of the planning, and she said if people like what they see this week, please let her hear that, and if they don't like it, please talk to me. I second that. Then Mary Jane Bolton. Weaver, I've actually not seen you. Is she here? Oh, there she is. They are at least as good as the three ladies from the Magic Flute, I can tell you. And now I'd like Father Paisley to tell us a few things about the liturgies this week.
Before I get to some practical details, I'd kind of like to set a little bit of a kind of a spiritual background. I also would like to welcome you to the 24th Sacred Music Colloquium, and I'd like to especially thank the Archdiocese of Indianapolis, Archbishop Tobin, the Archdiocesan Music Director, Andy Motika, and the pastor of St. John's, Father Rick Nagel, for letting us pray and sing in this historic archdiocese. We really do look forward to a very wonderful week. The Sacred Music Colloquium is many things. It is an immersion in Gregorian chant. It is a musical delight. It is a time for renewal of friendships and making of new friends. It is a time to learn and to be inspired. It is a time to celebrate our Catholic faith with joy and devotion. It is a time for liturgical excellence. It is a time for prayer and sacrifice. It is a time for spiritual renewal and perhaps conversion. Many people have maybe even come back to the faith through this colloquium. The CMAA colloquium is a musical, spiritual, liturgical retreat, not just a conference. The sacred music we sing and the masses and liturgies that we celebrate form one reality, a reality that has been passed down to us through centuries of loving tradition. Tradition is a good word for us. It's not a bad word. It is a great word. It is our rootedness in the faith of our fathers. It connects us with each other across the world and across the centuries. We live in a world today that exalts not in connectedness with tradition, but with individualism, with the subjective, with the experiential. What is true and good is what I feel is true and good. For this subjective mentality, sacred music and liturgy are wonderful if they make me feel good. Each individual becomes the pope of his or her own spirituality based on their feelings. This individualism, which can be applied to a parish, could be called congregationalism. It is based on what those in control or those who attend like. Sacred music and liturgy become ruled by the likes and dislikes of that particular parish and not by any objective norms that have been passed down. Individualism and congregationalism cause division in the church, in the very place where we should have the absolute unity. What we are going to do this week is not based on the CMAA's subjective feelings about sacred music and liturgy. We are not doing what we do because we as a group feel that this is our particular ambiance, or because Pope Benedict liked it and we liked Pope Benedict, or because it makes us feel better about ourselves. No, we do what we do because it is the objective, concrete tradition of the Catholic Church that has been passed down through the ages to every people and culture up to and including Sacrosanto Concilium of the Second Vatican Council. Now, I will be the first to admit that there are some very ambiguous passages in Sacrosanto Concilium. These passages have opened up the door to what Michael Davies called liturgical time bombs, imprecise and vague passages that became the basis of things allowed that were never imagined by the Council Fathers. But if you honestly and rationally read Sacrosanto Concilium in the context of the extraordinary form of the Mass, which was the Mass being celebrated at that time, you will see clearly that the CMAA has been teaching and promoting what we've been promoting for these past 50 years is what the Church says it wants. Continuity with tradition and continuity with the official documents of the Church on sacred music and liturgy. It is an eye-opening experience because, sadly, it's not the norm in so many places. A second point I would like to make tonight and emphasize, especially in regard to the Mass, is that what we do here is to sing the Mass, not sing at Mass. Now, it's okay to sing at Mass sometimes, but that should be the least thing we do. When you sing hymns, you are singing at Mass. Hymns are extrinsic to the Mass. They are an addition to the Mass. The propers, the introit, the gradual, the hallelujah, the readings, the offertory verse, the communion verse, are the official texts of the Mass. And so they are to be sung. The ordinary, the Kyrie, the Gloria, the Creed, the Holy Holy, the Agnus Dei are meant to be sung, not just the Holy Holy, as we hear in so many places. The priest, or the bishop, the celebrant, is meant to sing his parts, and the people should respond in song. And if you have energy, any energy left after all of that, then you can sing all the hymns you want. If there are two basic principles that I hope you will take home with you from this colloquium, besides the beautiful musical experience, it's that we must have continuity with tradition, and we must sing the Mass, not just sing at Mass. There are two basic principles of what we've been at for 50 years. If you get these two basic points, then we're all on the same page. Now, a few housekeeping details. You will see what the CMA has been promoting during these years, and so we'll go on to the housekeeping. We have specifically chosen some permissible, yet less common liturgical practices, which maybe in some places could seem somewhat controversial. We purposely choose these because A, we believe they are a means of building a stronger continuity in tradition with the former form of the Roman liturgy, the extraordinary form. B, they foster a deeper sense of the sacred. And C, because they are allowed. Basically, that's the three. We use Latin. No surprise here, this is what the Vatican Council called for. Most of our Masses will take place ad orientem, both the ordinary form and the extraordinary form, which means the priest facing the altar, which symbolizes liturgical east. Six candles will be placed on the altar with the crucifix in the middle. This is the traditional Roman arrangement, still used in Rome. And we ask that you consider kneeling for Holy Communion and receive our Lord on the tongue. Of course, the norm in the United States is standing with the option of receiving on the tongue or in the hand. But we ask you to try that and to see, it's a very different experience if you haven't done it before. Also, we will be offering confessions because this is a very moving spiritual time. And people that may have been away or maybe have drifted in some of the practices of their faith feel a need to go to confession. So all the priests here will hear your confession at any time if you need to go, but we will also ask the priest to sign up to hear confessions, and basically they'll be held 45 minutes before each of the Masses. So on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 4:15 to 4:45, on Friday from 1:45 to 2:15, and on Saturday from 2:15 to 2:45 in the church. As is the teaching throughout the Catholic world, we ask that only those Catholics who are in a state of grace and practice their faith come forward to receive Holy Communion. If you are not in a state of grace or haven't been practicing, we have confession available so that you can receive Holy Communion. Those who are not Catholic, we welcome you to the colloquium, but we ask you to remain at your places during communion and pray with us for the eventual unity of all Christians. Finally, we ask you to remember to keep a prayerful silence in church. I know when you're practicing and having rehearsals, there's always a little extra noise that you can't help. But especially when we're in the presence of our Lord in the Blessed Sacrament, we should always try to remember that and show a great respect for that and for other people who are trying to pray. And please dress respectfully for all liturgical events. Business casual is the norm. This is an uplifting, joyful week, and I hope and I know you will enjoy it. Now I have just two very practical announcements. For my course on the sing, if you're going to sing the rite, sing it right, that is not just for priests and seminarians, it's also for any lay people who want to teach priests and seminarians what to do. So it's open to everyone. And then finally, all priests, deacons, and seminarians and servers, please come up to the front over here after everything's finished, because we have to have a sign up for confessions, and I need to get all the letters of suitability, and also for the servers to meet Bill Riccio, our MC, so that we can get everything going here. Thank you.
Book sale, and Kyle's going to talk about that as well as a few other things. Is that right?
Yeah, right.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kyle Murphy, and I guess I'm the official logistics person, we'll say, for the colloquium. I want to just extend the invitation to you. If you have any questions about anything that are not music related, come talk to me. If you have questions that are music related, then all the faculty stood up and you can ask one of them. Or several of the other attendees who know a lot more than I do. I will be manning the book sale table, which will be at the same table where registration was earlier today. So if you need something, please come find me during the day. I might be running errands, but I will be there most of the time. And then if you have not yet registered, then please come down to the table tomorrow morning. I should be at the table tomorrow, probably from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. straight. So if you need to get in touch with me tomorrow, then you can. We do have available some vocal lessons with Dr. Cecilia Nam, and there are still some slots available. If you signed up for those, or if you want to sign up for those, please pay me tonight so that we can get that processed, and we don't have to worry about you paying ahead of your lesson because you've already paid. So there are a couple people who still need to pay, and then anyone else who signs up. I will be at the table after dinner until 9 o'clock. So please come find me and pay tonight, and I can take credit cards, I can take checks, cash. Not money orders, but you know, I suppose if you have to. Also, if you have lost and found items, please turn them into me, and I'll keep that track of that, and you can come find me if need be. For the book sale, this year we do have reduced prices on all the CMAA titles and several other titles. We have plenty of books that we have not had at the colloquium before. Some of those we have very limited copies of. So if you want a specific book, please come early to the book sale. We will certainly run out of things probably by the end of the day tomorrow, but certainly by the time later on in the week we'll be running out of things. We will not be having any sort of sale at the end of the week, or any sort of let's make a deal with Kyle like last year. It was great fun, but the book prices are already reduced, and we don't want to encourage people to wait till the last minute to buy the books, because we prefer to get them out so we don't have to ship them out. So you heard it from here, there will be no additional sales at the end of the week, so you don't have to wait. If you have any questions about anything, please feel free. Come see me at the table during the day and right after this. So thank you very much.
The Church Music Association has become very famous for supplying a lot of resources, publications, our journal, as well as a wonderful website. I hope everybody has been to that website. And you know that there are thousands of things that you can download there for free. While it seems that the CMA is a public service station, we do encourage everybody to become a member. The membership is only $48. You get 4 journals per year. And from this time on, we shall also offer special discounts on the book sales, as well as for the next colloquium for members, and that alone pays the membership. We really want to increase our membership, so I will continue to make this announcement every day until by the end of the week everybody is signed up. And if not, we'll lock you in a room until signed up. I'm sure that a lot of you, especially the newcomers, have a ton of questions. And if you ask the 10 people around your table, you'll get 11 different answers. But are there any questions that I can answer from the floor here? Probably tons. None? Well, that's fine. Nothing right now? Well, then think about them for tomorrow, and we'll come back to that. We do want to end the evening with Compline. I hope that at least some of you have enough of the books around the table that you could possibly share. If you feel that even in these simple chant songs, chanted songs, you have a hard time finding where it is a half step up and a whole step down or something like that, you're probably in one of the beginning chant courses. That's your first way to assess your own ability. Those of you who have not met the president of our organization is Dr. William Mart. He's going to say a few words and then we'll go over to Compline.
The Church Music Association was begun as a combination of the Society of St. Cecilia and the Gregorian, the Organization of Gregorian Chant, Gregorian something, and St. Gregory's Society, that's it. And so we count ourselves as our 50th anniversary as a combined organization. But in fact, we go back to 1874 with the Society of St. Cecilia. So it's also our 140th anniversary. But that's not the important part. The important part is that the reason for the amalgamation of those two societies was to realize the prescriptions of the Second Vatican Council. In 1964, the Constitution of the Sacred Liturgy had just been published. And these two societies thought that they should join forces and work to maintain Gregorian chant and classical polyphony in the context of what the council asked for in terms of active participation. The terms active participation go back to Pope Pius X and his motu proprio, Tra le sollecitudini. In the Italian, it was participazione attiva, active participation. But when it was translated into Latin, it was participatio actuosa, actual participation. And if you look at the tradition of papal teaching from Pius X up until the Council, you see that there is a profound notion of participation. It is not activity. It is a deep participation in the action of Christ in the Mass. As a member of the body of Christ, you join with him in offering his sacrifice to the Father. All other aspects vocal and musical are for the purpose of supporting this participation. The liturgical movement in the 30s Pius X complained about the way the congregation was not active. And what he meant was they weren't listening and they weren't following. They were either saying the rosary or they were listening to music from the opera or played by brass bands. That was the context of his cultivating active participation. In the 30s, the liturgical movement cultivated the use of hand missals by the laity. All of a sudden, people began to follow the words of the priest as in their hand missals, and that was their kind of participation. It's a little bit liberalistic, but it is a step in the direction of the really profound participation that was sought. So at the time of the council then, there was a sense that now the congregation will be following the Mass intelligently, participating in it intelligently, participating in it in their own way, vocally, to the parts that are proper to them. As Father Paisley said, in some ways it went off track. That is to say, all of a sudden, the activity became the emphasis rather than the octuosa. And the focal point became what we call anthropocentric as opposed to theocentric. That is to say, properly the liturgy should first and foremost be theocentric. It's oriented to God. There are anthropocentric, human orientations that are valid, but they're subordinate to the theocentric. And when the anthropocentric becomes the most prominent, then the liturgy is subverted. So Pius X also talked about the characteristics of sacred liturgy and of sacred music, and he spoke specifically of the sacred and the beautiful. The beautiful is an interesting one, and that's one that concerns us particularly. Both, in fact, concern us, because music is one of the principal ways in which we can emphasize, institute the sacredness of the liturgy. Secular music conveys a secularity about the liturgy. And I've often suspected that when secular music is being performed in the church, some people are going to say, I can get that at home, why bother? And so there needs to be something distinctive and something theocentric about the music. But also, it should be beautiful, as he says. And his words are usually translated as beautiful, but there is an interesting wrinkle to his beautiful, and that is his actual words are bontà delle forme in Italian, or in Latin, bonitas formarum. So goodness of forms in the plural. What are forms in the plural that concern the liturgy? Everything that we're going to be doing this week, the introits, the collects, the lessons, all of the prayers, the preface, every one of the actions in the liturgy are forms. And goodness of forms means that these various genres, these various actions are emphasized and are made beautiful by use of music which distinguishes them one from the other. So, for example, if you go to a low mass, you'll hear three lessons read, and they'll all be read in the same tone of voice, and pretty much they'll sound the same, and you'll be edified by the content of them, but you won't notice their difference so much. But if you hear an Old Testament lesson sung, as you will this week, the Old Testament lesson is sung to a special tone, and it has a descent like a trumpet, and the epistle has a hortatory tone, just like the epistles of St. Paul. So the middle cadence of the epistle and the ending is like this. Very different from the epistle. And the gospel then will have a very simple ending that is suited to the impressive simplicity of the gospel. Each of those lessons is very distinct when they're sung. And that's part of the beauty of the liturgy, the way each part plays its own distinct and well-defined role, and that well-definition comes from how it's performed musically. So that means then we need to think about the way the liturgy goes together, the way it's sung as a completely sung liturgy. And this is what I call the paradigm. The paradigm that we'll be working with principally here is the Mass sung principally in Latin, but all sung from beginning to end. It's sung, and the propers are sung in the Gregorian, the traditional Gregorian chants, the ordinaries, the lessons are sung, the prayers are sung, each to its own melody and its own kind of music. This is an ideal, and we recognize that not everybody can just go home and start doing that in their Sunday Mass. You have two fairly distinct factors, the congregation and the pastor. and so what we suggest, and we realize that each situation is different, and as I talk with more people, I'm really realizing more and more just how different the situations are, what you can do, and what you have to wait to do. So that the on the one hand you have the paradigm, but on the other hand you have what I would call gradualism. You start simply. You add one or another piece. For instance, you might, instead of singing Marty Hoggins' Sanctus, you might sing a Gregorian Sanctus, the simplest one. Sanctus. To my mind, it's a no-brainer. Which one of those is better? And it's, so you can start with that, or you can start with singing a communion antiphon during the communion time, when there is ample time for various things. You can have a communion hymn and still sing the communion antiphon also. And you can then try singing the communion antiphon with some psalm verses and various and sundry things. Or you can begin to sing some of the other propers. One of the ways that people do is they sing the introit just a little bit before the Mass so it doesn't take too long. Well, that's not the ideal, but that's the camel's nose in the tent. It's a way to get started, and it's and you know you can't be discouraged. I think of the cathedral.
or think of, look at Cologne Cathedral, for instance. It was all designed in the 13th century, was not finished until the 19th century, and there it still is. So what you start with, what's being done with the liturgy, may not be finished even in your lifetime, but you may have started something that will go on. Don't be too discouraged if the pastor says, I'm canceling this music. I was just telling somebody about when I played the organ at the parish, in the parish that I now direct the choir. I played the organ, it was a terrible little electronic organ. And I finally said that my other duties on Sunday morning kept me from doing it, so I went to the pastor and said, I'm going to have to resign my position. What do you suppose he said? Oh, good. Oh, good. Now we can use the money to paint the church. So there are going to be reversals. Don't be discouraged. Sometimes you may even have to find a different place to work that really wants what you have to offer. But all of those things are ways in which you can apply the paradigm to your own situation. And that's why we have emphasized a little bit more the Latin than the English. The Latin is pieces that have been proven over a millennium. So they have a beauty and a stability that can give us a notion of how it ought to be, and can in fact give us a point of comparison with the English that we may be introducing on the same level. I think of the times when one becomes discouraged, and one need not be, that there is always a way forward with it. You have then the opportunity this week to experience the paradigm. And I repeat, we have consciously wanted to give you the paradigm so that you'd have the experience of how it ought to be, and so that you will be able to go back into your own parishes and apply it as it may be applied. But I want to suggest to you that as you do this, you want to participate in the liturgy in the deepest possible way. Pay attention to what's going on. Don't just listen to the music, but observe how the music plays its role in the liturgy. We have tried to show some of the various ways in which the paradigm can be used. So, for instance, you can have an offertory and then a motet, or you can have an offertory and then chant verses, or you can have an offertory and organ music. At various times during the week, we will use one or another of those ways of doing it. So I would suggest that over and above your fundamental participation in the liturgy itself, you be observant about how each of these things work. That is a learning that you can take home to great advantage. Let me suggest a couple of practical matters. Membership in the Church Music Association is a benefit. I say that particularly as editor of Sacred Music. You get four great issues of Sacred Music in the year. And you may realize, some of you who are subscribers already, that we didn't do so well last year. We I would encourage you to sing the Divine Office also, so that we have in the mornings at 8:15 lauds, and then some of the evenings we have Compline, and we will sing Compline tonight after in just a few moments. If you don't have a book, I forgot to bring my book, and so I had to go out and sneak one. But at your tables there will probably be somebody who look on with. Finally, then, let me just say a very brief word about that category, bontà delle forme, beauty. Beauty is not only just a characteristic of the liturgy. Beauty is in its highest manifestation and characteristic of God himself. And we have those things that are called the transcendentals, the true, the good, and the beautiful, among other things, that are characteristic of all things to some degree or another, and characteristic in the highest of God himself. These things can be a ladder to God. Whenever we experience a thing of beauty, we are, in fact, capable of intuiting the kind of beauty that is held by God himself. Beauty is the glue that holds the good and the true together. There is a controversy among some scholars. Well, there are only two transcendentals, the true and the good. The beautiful is just the interrelationship between the two, or something to that effect. But in fact, Thomas Aquinas addressed that issue quite specifically. He said, the beautiful is distinct from the good because the good is the object of the will, and the beautiful is the object of the intellect. When we perceive something beautiful, we do it with our intellect, and this is then, this results in a delight in its beauty. So that the beautiful of the liturgy then is immediate. And this is the other thing, the distinction between the true and the beautiful. The true is persuasive by argument. The beautiful makes for delight by immediate apprehension. One doesn't have to make any reasoning to come to the conclusion that something is beautiful. And this is why the liturgy is so well served by things that are beautiful. Because when it's beautiful, it speaks for itself. Solzhenitsyn, in his Nobel Prize lecture, spoke about the fact that the true and the good can be subverted by bad argument and by bad action, but the beautiful speaks for itself. And that's why the liturgy must be beautiful. It must speak for itself. It must convey to the worshiper that great participation which the worshiper has potentially in, as a member of the body of Christ, in the action of Christ himself in offering a sacrifice to the Father. All of our music is for the sake of conveying and instancizing that very our participation in that action. And so there is, I think, why we want to think about actuosa participatio and about the role of beauty in the liturgy. So I wish you the best for this coming week, and I look forward with great anticipation.